Senate will be in order. Will everyone in the Senate and the galleries please rise for the prayer by the Reverend Gock and remain standing for the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag.
From the 55th Psalm we hear, cast your burdens on the Lord, and he will sustain you. He will never permit the righteous to be moved. Heavenly Father, we cry to you as we see about us those things and people who bring sorrow and pain. So we pray for you to pour wisdom and mercy upon us so that we might be the servant you desire us to be. And as we serve you here in the Senate, may we do what we can that brings relief and help to those in need and deals with those who bring evil among us. In your holy name we pray. Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Madam Secretary, please call the roll.
Senators Brown, Chappelle Nadal, Cunningham, Curls, Dixon, Igel, Emery, Hageman, Holzman, Hoskins, Hummel, Kehoe, Koenig, Kraus, Leibola, Munslinger, Nasheed, Onder, Richard, Riddle, Rizzo, Romine, Rowden, Sater, Schoff, Schatz, Shoup, Sifton, Sylvie, Wallingford, Walsh, Wasson, Whelan.
Quorum being present, the Senate is in session. Madam Secretary, please read the journal.
Journal of the Senate, first regular session, 48th day, Tuesday, April 4th, 2017. The Senate met pursuant to adjournment.
Senator from Cole, what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that further reading of the journal be dispensed with and the same be approved as though having been fully read.
Senator from Cole has moved that further reading of the journal be dispensed with and same be approved as fully read. Does any senator desire to be heard? Hearing none. Senator from Cole, you're recognized. Close.
Thank you, Mr. President. I close.
Those of the opinion that motion shall prevail, say aye.
Aye.
Those of the contrary, say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Introduction of guest. Senator from Callaway, what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. I have a very special guest here today from my district. On your left and my right, I'd like to introduce the students from Fulton High School. Go ahead and stand up that are visiting us for student.
The Senate will come to order. The Senate will come to order for introduction of guests. Senator from Callaway, you may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. They are visiting us today because it's Student Government Day. Included are Baylor Webb, Bonderer, Alex Armstrong, and Julia Mendez, and their advisor, Jan Reyes. And I ask that the body please join me in making them feel.
Would the guests of the Senator from Callaway please rise and be recognized by the members of the Missouri Senate? Introduction of guests. Senator from the 8th, what purpose do you rise?
Introduction of guests. In the upper gallery, we have 74 juniors that are from a government studies. They were originally planned to be here on March 8th, but due to the tornado, their trip was delayed. So if the Senate would make them feel welcome, I would very much appreciate it.
With the guests of the Senate from the 8th, please rise, and with the members of the Senate chamber, please welcome them. Introduction of guests, Senator from Newton. What purpose
you rise?
Mr.
President, today we have some young people with us. The Youth of the Year program is Boys and Girl Clubs America's premier recognition program and the highest honor a club member can achieve. It promotes and recognizes teens who have developed sound character, healthy lifestyle, leadership abilities, and a willingness to give back their communities. These Students excel academically, have made outstanding contributions to their families, schools, communities, clubs, and in many cases have overcome major obstacles. Clubs in Missouri serve over 50,000 youth each year in 21 cities across the state. The youth featured here today are evidence of outstanding efforts and hard work of Missouri's Boys and Girls Clubs organizations, their staff, and volunteers. The 10 finalists that will be competing this year to represent Missouri at the Boys and Girls Club National Youth of the Year competition are...
Senate will come to order so the senator can introduce his guests. Senator from Newton, you may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. Victoria Marie Blackman from Boys and Girls Club of Poplar Bluff. Sierra Blankenship from the Boys and Girls Club of St. Charles County, St. Charles. Carissa Jane Boynton from the Boys and Girls Club of Southwest Missouri, Joplin. Eric Cowan from the Boys and Girls Club of Springfield. Katrin Kelly from the Boys and Girls Club of Ozarks, Hollister. Jacob Rogers from Boys and Girls Club of West Central Missouri, Sedalia. Kayshawn Smith from Boys and Girls Club of Kansas City. William Turner, Whiteman Air Force Base Youth Program, Knobnoster. Delaney Joy White from the Boys and Girls Club of Capital City, Jefferson City. Jaleesa Wines from the Boys and Girls Club of Greater St. Louis. They're here somewhere, I think, so if the Senator would make them feel welcome.
Would the guest of the Senator from Newton please rise and be recognized by the Chamber of the Missouri Senate? Introduction of guests. Senator from Barton, what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. Introduce a very special guest. Senate District 31 is proud to present the Doctor of the Day today, Dr. Curtis Long, over to my left and on your right. You can stand up if you would, Mr. Long. Dr. Long has only been practicing for 53 years, so if you have any real hard problems, you might want to check with someone else. I think the bag that he has with him may be the bag he began carrying 53 years ago, Mr. President, but I'm very happy to introduce him. He's with us from Butler. And we've been pleased to have his practice for that long.
Please. Let's please welcome the guest of the Senator from Barton and the Doctor of the Day to the Missouri Chamber, Senate Chamber. Introduction of guests. Senator from Webster, what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. I have some very special guests that I'd like to introduce, please.
You may proceed.
Mr. President, on your right and my left seated, if they would rise, I have some special guests here from Willow Springs. They're sponsored by the Rotary Club Student Government Day they're here for. I would like that Zeke, Emily, Lydia, Avery, Maggie, and Brenda all stand, please, and the body to make them welcome. And I'd also like to have Emily and Lydia made honorary pages of the day. Thank you, Mr. President.
They will be made pages for the day. And let's please welcome the guests from the Senator from Webster to the Missouri Senate Chamber. Introduction of guests. Senator from the Ninth, Purpose
Rush. Thank you. Mr. President, to my right and to your left, I am very excited to introduce this morning our all-star hometown hero, our county executive, Mr. Frank White, Jr. We're really happy to have he and his chief of staff, Caleb Clifford, in the Capitol this morning. But we're always excited to see our county executive, and I will say that he is the only major leaguer who, as a young man, helped build the stadium that he later played in, and for that we are also very proud. So with that, Mr. President, I'd like the body to make them feel welcome.
Let's please welcome the guests from the Senator to the Ninth to the Missouri Senate Chamber. Introduction of guests, Senator from Cape Girardeau.
Mr. President, I have some very special guests in the upper gallery. On your right and my left, we have 10 students from Southeast Missouri State University, in my backyard in Cape Girardeau, and they're the social work class 323, practice 3. Please make them welcome.
Would the guests of the Senator from Cape Girardeau please rise, and would the Senate Chamber please make them welcome to the Missouri Senate today. Introduction of guests. Senator from the 14th, what purpose do you rise?
Mr. President, I would like to inquire of the Senator from Cole.
Senator from Cole. Senator from Cole, do you yield to an inquiry from the Senator from the 14th?
I do.
You may proceed, Senator.
Senator, yesterday you made an announcement about today being Cancer Awareness Day, which I think is a very, very important exercise for all of us. The one concern that I had in your announcement yesterday is that you said to the body and our staffers, you can wear your tennis shoes outside of session. However, when I looked in the rule book, there is no rule that specifically talks about the shoes that we wear, but for perhaps Rule 97, which deals with when our rules are silent, we go according to the Senate rules. And I'm not sure what the plans are, the agenda is for today, but I would like for us, for those of us who are choosing to participate in Cancer Awareness Day, for us to be able to wear our tennis shoes today on the Senate floor. And I don't know if that is a motion, but I am very supportive of cancer awareness. As you know, what's going on in my district, there are a lot of people who have cancer, and it's, you know, affecting a lot of folks. So I don't know what the call would be.
Yeah, I don't know. I wore mine this morning, and I got grief for wearing them to a committee meeting, actually, and I thought, this is a committee meeting, but I changed before we came out here.
Yes. Yeah, so what do you think about us in this body to recognize Cancer Awareness Day, especially since there is not a rule in our rule book that talks about the shoes we wear, that we do that unless we get into a filibuster and then we can remove it. We can remove that waiver.
You know, I see both sides of it. So I understand. I think bringing awareness outside of the chamber, I've had a lot of people notice today, especially when you have a suit and white tennis shoes on. When I normally wear boots, it was achieving its objective, but I also feel strongly about, I know there's traditions and protocols, and as you're now pointing out, unwritten rules in the Senate, and I think it's appropriate for us to demonstrate our support, and I know you have strong feelings, as do I, about this particular issue, but I also think there's a balance between how we conduct ourselves in the chamber. So I think you can achieve both. So I would ask you to consider that.
So what about if I wore my tennis shoes? Would you tell the chair?
Well, my first week in session, we had a major snowstorm, and I wore blue jeans in, and I got busted pretty hard at the time. So somebody else snitched on me, I might say, because I quickly snuck under my desk and didn't think anybody'd notice it. But I am not a tattletale, if that's what you're asking me. I can't speak for the other 32 members that are seated.
All right, because I also wore pink socks with my
tennis shoes. Oh, that's excellent.
And the reason why...
Our Senate administrator had some kind of like pink laces on her white tennis shoes. It looked really good.
Well, pink because there are a lot of women who have breast cancer.
Yes, ma'am.
And I like to stand, and men who have breast cancer too.
Right.
So I like to stand up and represent. So anytime I have to pick colors, sometimes you guys will see me with a lot of pink on. It's because I'm recognizing those who we have lost and those who have breast cancer.
Right. My sister is currently battling that now, so I appreciate that.
Thank you so much, Senator.
Yep.
Announcements. Senator from Cole.
Are we on introduction? What order of business are we on?
I'm sorry, we're on introduction of guests.
Thank you, Mr. President. I knew you knew that, and I didn't want to let you forget. But I have some guests to introduce, Mr. President.
You may
today, seated with us in the upper gallery, they are well noticed, Mr. President, as you noticed many of their members and folks on their team at the various companies around the state. I'm pleased to introduce the members of the Missouri Asphalt Pavers Association. They're here with today in the gallery. If they could please stand. They're easily identified by their safety vest. These fine folks are here today for the annual Asphalt Lobby Day, and I'd ask they please be made welcome in the Missouri Senate.
Let's please welcome the guests from Senator Cole to the Missouri Senate. Introduction of guests. Introduction, Senator from Clay, what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. I would like to join with my colleague from the 14th and seek unanimous consent for senators to wear tennis shoes on the floor today in honor of cancer awareness.
The senator from Clay has requested unanimous consent for the senators to wear tennis shoes on the floor. Is there any objections? Senator from Cole.
I absolutely hate to do this, and I know this will anger several members, but out of all due respect to the Senate rules, as we know, there are rules in the rule book, and there are also rules that are unwritten rules that are just kind of part of the tradition. I'm 100% behind showing awareness for the cause today and have been demonstrating so my own self, but I would ask that we stick with the unwritten rules of the Senate and observe those traditions.
The objection with unanimous consent has been denied. We are back on introduction of guests. Introduction of guests. Senator from Butler, what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. Here with us today in the Senate chamber, some friends of mine from my district, from Advance and also Dexter, Missouri. To your right, Mr. President, and to my left, we have Harold Miles, accompanied by Paula Miles, Carrie Jenkins, and Megan Stever. And I would hope the chamber would make them welcome today here in the state capitol.
Would the guests of the Senator from Butler please rise and be recognized by the members of the Missouri Senate? Introduction of guests. Introduction of guests. Senator from the 24th, what purpose do you rise?
Mr. President, I would like to rise to a point of personal privilege.
Senator, you are recognized for a point of personal privilege. Senator from the 24th, you may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I too would like to make comments about today's special day with the American Cancer Society, Suits and Sneakers Day. As we know, it is a day to show support for the American Cancer Society, an organization dedicated to defeating cancer and helping those with the disease access the resources they need. Mr. President, I have a very personal story, as I'm sure many of us do here in this chamber. But just this past January, on the 21st, my sister-in-law, age 64, died, lost her life to triple negative breast cancer. Fought that battle for 3 years. It is a rare cancer and one that is usually deadly, as was the case with my sister-in-law, Pam McClellan.
Senate chamber will come to order when the senator is speaking on a point of personal privilege. Senator, you may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. Pamela was fortunate in many ways because she had the resources she needed, the family surrounding her, to access all the care she could get. She traveled on a regular basis to clinics outside of the state to access treatment. She was enrolled in a number of clinical trials that all in the end failed her and were unable to keep her alive. Pam McClellan, my sister-in-law, was one of the most beautiful people you would ever meet, both inside and out. And her loss is significant to our family, as you can tell. And frankly, I didn't think I would get so emotional on the floor, so I apologize. But what I wanted to talk about today was the importance of what the American Cancer Society is doing here, and that they do have resources, and that there are ways for us in the state of Missouri, for we as legislators, to do things to support those efforts so that the rest of us don't have to suffer the loss of someone that we love so much. The American Cancer Society has released its Cancer Action Network report entitled, How Do You Measure Up?, in which each state is ranked on a variety of policies related to cancer control and prevention, and Missouri did not rank well. In fact, according to the American Cancer Society report, Missouri fell short in several policy areas, and that's where we come in. Smoke-free laws, we fell short because we have yet to pass a statewide smoking ban. As a matter of fact, the city of Jefferson, in which we serve, has a citywide smoking ban, and yet here in the Capitol building, legislators are allowed to be above the law and to allow smoking in their offices, which I will remind each of us are not our offices. They are the people's offices. Tobacco prevention funding, because we here in Missouri spend only 0.1% of what the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control, recommend. We don't have a ban for minors on indoor tanning. We don't protect our young people from skin cancer that is so often a result of using indoor tanning beds. And we haven't increased access to Medicaid for our low-income families because we haven't expanded eligibility. So our working families, who make very little money, are suffering. And the American Cancer Society today will be visiting you and representatives in your offices or wherever they can find you to talk about one particular bill that about which they are very concerned, Senate Bill 28, which requires the Missouri Department of Social Services to apply for a global waiver that allows a federally capped Medicaid block grant, which may include capped per capita allocations and capped allotments on Medicaid spending. And if we were to pass that legislation, either we will cut families or people off who need services, we will restrict the amount of services they need, or we, the state of Missouri, will have to pony up with dollars to cover the costs that Medicaid expansion would require. So, according to the American Cancer Society, both block granting and capping Medicaid reimbursement costs per enrollee raise serious issues about the impact on the program's ability to deliver affordable health care, particularly for those suffering from serious illnesses such as cancer. If and when Senate Bill 28 comes before this chamber for debate, I hope that everyone remembers this day when they laced up their shoes to show support for the American Cancer Society. But truth be told, it doesn't matter which shoes we wear if all we do is walk away from those in need. Thank you, Mr. President.
Introduction of guest. Hearing none, petitions, memorials, remonstrances. Petitions, memorials, remonstrances. Resolutions. Concurrent resolutions. Senator from Cole.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of Senate bills for perfection. And I'd ask you recognize the Senator from the 9th District on Senate Bill number 373.
Hearing no objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of Senate bills for perfection. Senator from the 9th, Senate Bill 303, Senator from the 373, Senator from the 9th.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. President. I move that Senate Bill number 373 be taken up for perfection.
The Senator from the 9th moves that Senate Bill number 373 be taken up for perfection. As many of the opinion that motion shall prevail, say aye.
Aye.
Those of the con.
Those
that prevail, say aye. Those of the contrary, say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Senator from the 9th.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senate Bill 373 seeks to establish the Missouri Senior Farmers Market Nutrition Program by requiring the Department of Health and Senior Services to apply for federal grants to provide low-income seniors with vouchers that may be exchanged for eligible food at farmers markets, roadside stands, and community-supported agriculture programs. Missouri is one of only 7 states to not participate in a Senior Farmer Market Nutrition Program. According to the bill, a couple over the age of 60 with an annual household income less than or equal to $20,826 would be eligible. This program also increases the availability for more nutritious food for low-income seniors, as well as increases profitability for local farmers. Mr. President, this bill is a win-win for both involved. It provides nutritious meals, and local produce for seniors while strengthening local economies and profitability for local farmers. So if there are no questions, Mr. President, I renew my motion.
Does any other senator desire to be heard on Senate Bill 373? Does any other senator desire to be heard? Senator from the second, what purpose do you rise?
To inquire of the senator from Cape Girardeau.
Senator from Cape Girardeau, do you yield to an inquiry from the senator from the second?
I do.
Thank you, Senator, for the inquiry. Senator, you know, I'm kind of a little bit frustrated because we have this unusual system of slots, and I really don't know what bill we're going to next. But it was my impression, and I did a lot of debate prep for a bill pertaining to a zoo tax. You know, I learned a lot about the zoo tax, and I thought that was going to be the first bill on the calendar today. It's my understanding that the senator from the 13th swapped or gave up her slot for I'm really bad with these district numbers. The senator from the 9th slot. So that was very kind of her. But I, you know, as I studied the zoo tax, I really and the phenomenon of zoological parks, I really thought, and some of the arguments being brought forth in favor of the zoo tax, I really thought it was especially poignant, given the debate we had on Senate Bill 41, your bill,
yes,
and Senate Bill 67, my bill. And one thing, as I listened to the proponents of the zoo tax, they were saying that, you know, it's really important that we do everything we can to bolster the zoo, that the zoo is the number one free attraction in the whole country, to the point that they were going to tax all the metro area, all the St. Louis metro area, to support the zoo. And that was really good for the city's image, the city's brand, and the whole metro area's brand. So that my constituents all the way out in Forestell and St. Charles County would have to drive an hour to get to the zoo. They would have to pay the same sales tax as someone who lived in, say, the Dogtown area, a couple blocks away from the zoo. And you know what? The argument was that we in St. Charles County, my constituents, were freeloaders because they go to the zoo for free. To which I said, you know, hey, charge us admission then. Don't call us freeloaders. And, you know, the other thing is this desire to have a free zoo, it seems to have this strain of liberal egalitarianism. Everything should be free. It reminds me of P.J. O'Rourke. If you know P.J. O'Rourke, great American humorist, political satirist.
I love reading his material.
P.J. is awesome.
Yes.
And P.J. once wrote, Senator, if you think health care is expensive now, just wait till it's free.
That's a good point.
And so I kind of thought of P.J. when I thought about the zoo tax. But last night I thought of something else. So here the talk was, and by the way, in fairness to all those working on the zoo tax bill, we were working on compromises, and we were probably pretty close, but, sometimes, I've said this a couple of times in this building, you know, sometimes when you think you have a deal in the building, and then all of a sudden you find a knife in your back, you just, the deal's off. I mean, I just, that's just sometimes the way it is. But what I thought about is, gosh, we really care about the zoo. And yet, the aldermen of the city of St. Louis, they really care about St. Louis's brand, too. Right? They really care. They want to make known to all the world, with Board Bill 203, was it, Senator? Board Bill 203, that the First Amendment be damned. The First Amendment be damned. We are going to make the city of St. Louis an abortion sanctuary city.
Right.
And I forget the exact vote in that board. It wasn't unanimous,
But it was a pretty strong vote in favor.
It was like 17-4 and 10 against, someone in that.
Yeah, way. Yeah, it was pretty strong vote in support. So it's kind of, as I'm thinking about the zoo, I'm thinking of new the Regional Commerce and Growth Association, maybe the Board of Tourism, can maybe have some new themes. St. Louis City, where we protect our baby animals, but not our babies or our women. What do you think about that?
Very ironic, isn't it?
Very ironic. That. Or maybe what we could do, and I actually, you know, had the amendment all ready to go, and I've actually distributed it. It's on there. I think we should change the name of the St. Louis Zoo. So the official name of the St. Louis Zoo right now isn't the St. Louis Zoo. It is the St. Louis Zoologic Park. Okay. So I think the new name should probably be, maybe I'll file this next year, because right now there is the legislature had to authorize a tax to fund the St. Louis Zoo. So yes. I think you know, hey, you come to us asking for the tax authorization, we might put some conditions on it, okay?
Sure.
So I think a new name should be the Midwest Abortion Sanctuary City Zoologic Park. What do you think about that?
Oh, that's very interesting. I hadn't thought about
that. Well, you know, it's interesting, but it's beautiful, because what it does is it takes two really important St. Louis City priorities, the zoo and being an abortion sanctuary city. You know, and you know, I think what we've witnessed in the last couple of weeks, two weeks ago, or the week before break, I had the Government Employee Protection Act, House Bill 251 to provide some protections to government union workers, and that was filibustered at great length. I think we spent over 10 hours on that. And you know, the hallmark, I think, of abuse of the filibuster is when you either don't talk on the bill or you're not really working toward a compromise. And the sure sign you're not working for a compromise is when the bill sponsor agrees to two of your amendments and you don't let it come to a vote. I agreed to an amendment from the senator from the first, the senator from the fourth, and yet it kept going on and it never came to a vote. Those two amendments that I agreed to.
Sure.
So I was going to let this amendment come to a vote. I wasn't going to hold the floor a long time just to kill the bill. I really would like to see a vote on this. So I was really disappointed we're not on the zoo tax this morning. But
you bring up a point here I hadn't really thought about.
Yeah.
Because I think you distributed an article on the zoo, if I'm not mistaken. I read it. Here it is, and it just starts out, the St. Louis Zoo is in a $50 million hole.
Yeah, yeah.
So that made me think, do we abort the babies of the animals that are going to be born? Because you're $50 million in the hole, so we can't afford any more baby animals. So do we
you got a
them?
Good point. You know, that's a good point. You know, economic
convenience that we can't afford another elephant or another lion. Yeah. Let's abort that.
Well, you know, that's a good point. That is a really good point, Senator. I don't know. Maybe, you know what? But you know what I do know? I don't know about the abortion rate of zoo animals. I don't know about that. But you know what I do know? Do you know that there is an Animal Welfare Act, and there are organizations, I'll find the names of those organizations right now, that zoos belong to.
Sure.
And you know, so speaking of filibusters, so your bill was two nights ago, my bill was last night.
Yes.
So your bill committed the egregious crime of standing up for the First Amendment, and the egregious crime of protecting alternatives to abortion agencies from frivolous lawsuits and from being persecuted and prosecuted out of business. I don't know how you sleep with yourself at night trying to give women an alternative to aborting their baby. But you know what? If the abortion industry, if NARAL and if Planned Parenthood demand it, your bill has to die.
Yeah, and Senator, I was kind of taken by surprise because we've all taken the oath here in the Senate and those who serve in the House saying that we'll uphold the United States Constitution and the Missouri Constitution, and that protects religious freedom, which is probably, I think they put it as the First Amendment because it's so
yes.
important. Without religious freedom, you don't worry about the other amendments.
And freedom of speech is also found
yes.
in the First Amendment.
Exactly. So I was really surprised there was such opposition because my bill wasn't doing anything to restrict abortions or to limit Planned Parenthood in
right.
any way or the people that use Planned Parenthood services. I was not on the offense. I was
right.
on the defense, just want to protect the alternative to abortion agencies and the pregnancy resource centers, that their First Amendment right was being taken away.
It's a good point about offense versus defense. If it weren't for the St. Louis City's Board Bill 203, would you have ever filed your bill?
No, I would not,
because no.
we have the Constitution, so
right.
I didn't need
we
to.
We have the U.S. Constitution.
But suddenly some organizations feel they're above the Constitution.
Yes. Well, I think that's it. I think that there is a desire not to, the phrase live and let live. We believe in living and let live, but we're no longer live and let live. We are, I can live, but I reserve my right to crush my opposition under the jackboot of government. And it's my understanding that around the country, NARAL, it's funny, NARAL changed their name. They call themselves NARAL Pro-Choice America. That first A stands for abortion. They don't even want to say the word,
right.
but they go around the country trying to pass abortion sanctuary city laws, which apparently is what St. Louis City really wants to be known for. They want to protect their baby animals, but they want to persecute those organizations, those individuals, those religious people who want to give women an alternative to abortion.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
I find that disturbing, really.
And you know, then we move on to my bill yesterday. I want to talk to you a little bit about something called the Animal Welfare Act and the American Zoo and Aquarium Association. Do you know all zoos, to my knowledge, are members of the American Zoo and Aquarium Association? And do you know among other provisions that if you belong to this organization, do you know you have to submit to annual inspections?
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, you know, I mean, annual inspections. In my bill, I had the audacity of requiring annual inspections. Never mind nursing homes are inspected twice a year. Never mind that child care facilities are inspected twice a year. Never mind that we inspect radiological equipment once a year. But somehow, it's beyond the pale to require that organizations do surgery.
Well, I find that
be
problematic, Senator, because I've worked for the two largest restaurant companies in the world, and in the News Tribune, occasionally you can find a list of all the inspections of all the restaurants
right.
or even grocery stores that sell food in a little eating area for their salad bars and that. Country clubs, any place that serves food, they're inspected and the results are there. I know my restaurants are inspected.
Three senators standing. Senator from the 24th, what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. I apologize for interrupting the debate. I'm seeking unanimous consent to introduce some very special guests.
Hearing no objection, Senator, you may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, on your right and my left on the side gallery, we have with me today Kim Harrelson, Jerry King, Becky Kalman. They are members of the School Social Workers Association of Missouri, and with them are Kim Moore, Katya Sussman, and Kara Chapman with the Missouri Association of School Psychologists. Now, Kim and Katya are the public relations advocacy co-chairs. Katya happens to be, well, she used to be when she was younger, my neighbor. They are here today, though, Mr. President, along with a larger group in the upper gallery, here to meet with their representatives and senators to talk about school mental health and to educate them about all the important services they provide to our children across the state, as well as to discuss the importance of having school-employed mental health professionals in all of our Missouri schools. Mr. President, I would ask that they stand to be recognized and that the body give them a warm welcome.
Would the guest of the Center from the 24th please rise and be welcomed to the Missouri Senate. Three senators standing. Senator from the 13th, what purpose do you rise?
Mr. President, introduction of a very special guest.
Hearing no objection. Senator, you may
Mr. proceed. President, on your right and my left, it will be very difficult to locate him in here, is one of my mayors who was successful again yesterday in his bid to be the mayor of Delwood, Missouri. Mayor Reggie Jones is here visiting with the Girls and Boys Club today, where he does great work. And I ask that the body make Mayor Jones feel welcome and congratulate him on his reelection.
Let's please welcome the mayor and the guest from the Senator 13th to the Missouri Chamber.
I don't know if you've noticed or not, but I think the former representative from St. Louis City used to wear that jacket in the chamber when you and I were there, and it's good to see it out again in the springtime.
I do remember that, Senator. I do remember that. Senators, you may proceed with your inquiry.
Senator,
Go ahead.
News Tribune about all the places that have been inspected, what the results were, any write-ups.
Yeah. Oh, really? Only were you inspected, but it was publicized?
Yes, publicized in the newspaper, exactly all the violations and if they were serious or critical. And, of course, an inspector can shut down a restaurant
just like that.
And they're not all, you know, pre-planned where you say, oh, tomorrow, remember, health inspection is going to take place where you can tidy everything up and get it
right.
They can come in at any moment, unannounced, and have the right to do an inspection. And even if a customer calls up and makes a complaint to the health board, they can be out there that same day.
Now, Senator, I think that the fact that they inspect your restaurants implies that your restaurants are unsafe places. There's no rational reason to inspect your restaurant. I think it's just an irrational prejudice and trying to restrict people's fundamental right to get a Big Mac.
Right, and you know, we're serving food, and you have to be careful with, you know, sanitary procedures, but we're not performing surgeries.
I was going to ask, do you do any surgery in any of your restaurants?
No, we don't do any surgery in our restaurants, so we don't have any, you know, germs around from surgery or, you know, blood dripping on the floor or body parts laying around.
You know, it's funny. And there have been abortion clinics where there have been.
Well, Gosnell's in Pennsylvania.
Clinic.
And you know, Senator, I followed that case, and did you know that really brought it to the national stage attention when Gosnell was exposed?
It did.
And the state of Maryland, right next door to Pennsylvania, thought, well, we better inspect our facilities. And do you know that over half of those failed their inspection?
Half of them failed their inspection.
Failed their inspection.
Well, the Planned Parenthood clinic in St. Louis, the last time an inspection was done, I don't know whether the DHSS said that they passed or failed, but clearly they found violations. And among those violations was rust, was dirt, was reusing of single-dose vials. And reusing of single-dose vials is really serious. If you've heard about some of the cases where people have had fungal meningitis and things, that's that kind of issue. You start sticking needles into vials of medicine that don't have preservatives in them.
Sure.
You're asking for problem. Well, that's Forest Park Reproductive Health Services in St. Louis.
Yeah, expiration date, we have that in restaurants. You can't use a particular product after it's been expired or exposed to a certain temperature. You have to throw it away.
Right. Yes. And that was another deficiency, multiple examples of expired medication. But, you know, it's funny. I'm glad the senator from the 24th you know, interrupted me for interrupted us for then, I don't mind, for the introduction of guests. I think that's great. We all extend their courtesy to our colleagues. But it reminded me, last night she was in her inquiry with the senator from the first, she was taking me to task for mentioning some of the complications of abortion. And those include, and she said, oh, it's terrible. You're using inflammatory language. You're implying that there are complications to abortion. Now, in all honesty, if you've ever had any surgery, I don't know if you've had, but I have, bleeding, infection, sure. Death is always a complication.
Well, infection is one of the biggest causes. You go into a hospital, everyone assumes they're going to get an infection because the germs hanging around the hospital.
That's right. And that concern is heightened in the case of an abortion because you're operating. I mean, if we're operating on your elbow, we can really isolate that field, sterilize it really well with betadine or whatever antiseptic we want. But by the nature of abortion, you're operating on an area that's not inherently sterile. So that risk of infection is greater. The fact that you're blindly, in many cases, blindly going in with instruments as opposed to going in and removing, say, your gallbladder, sure. There's the risk of bleeding, which is heightened compared to other surgeries. There's the risk of perforation of the uterus because the pregnant uterus is very soft. So it's not like doing a D&C, let's say, on a postmenopausal woman where the uterus is much, much harder. So there's that risk of perforation. When that uterus is perforated, there can be damage to the bladder, to the fallopian tubes, to the bowels. That has happened. It has happened in Missouri. There have been cases of that. There have been cases of not only infection, but sepsis and disseminated intravascular coagulation, which is very serious, a high degree of mortality.
And, Senator, did you know that the CDC freely admits that the complications and problems with abortion aren't adequately substantiated and documented because it's not put down hemorrhaging due to an abortion,
right,
or infection due to abortion?
That's
it's
right.
Just hemorrhage or infection.
They don't.
And
they
so they say
they
there's more
it.
Out there than you imagine.
When pro-choice forces quote abortion statistics, almost always they're quoting the Alan Guttmacher Institute, which is the research arm of Planned Parenthood. That's where almost all those statistics come out. In fact, have you ever read Bernard Nathanson's classic book, Aborting America?
No, I have not.
So Bernard Nathanson was one of the founding members of NARAL. And Bernard Nathanson, it's funny, he too, until the last few years of his life, he professed himself as an atheist. And he was not only a founding member of NARAL, but he ran the largest abortion clinic in the free world in New York City at the time. But he had a problem. His problem was that while he was doing abortions on one side of the town and talking to women about terminating their pregnancy, on the other side of the town, he had a private obstetrical practice where he talked to women about their baby. And what really got him was the introduction of the ultrasound. And he saw, as many of us did with our kids and our grandkids, he saw those babies doing backflips, sucking their thumb, playing with their toes, crying, yawning. He saw that, and he showed it to his pregnant patients. And he said, I can't do it anymore. It's almost like that moment when Whitaker Chambers looked at his little daughter's ear and he said, I can't be a communist spy anymore. No mere collision of molecules made that ear. Something else made that ear. And Whitaker Chambers said, I've got to suppress that thought because I know where that goes. It goes to a creator. It goes to God. And then I can't be a communist anymore. Well, Whitaker Chambers, of course, eventually broke with communism. Well, Bernard Nathanson broke from his radical pro-abortionism and became one of the leading pro-life leaders of our century. But Nathanson said that the back alley abortion statistics that are frequently thrown at us when we're out here on the floor of the Senate, Bernard Nathanson in Aborting America says, we made them up. He said, I know. I made them up. I, Bernard Nathanson, made them up. So, of course, along with any surgical procedure, there is that risk of death. So we inspect our McDonald's, we inspect our nursing homes twice a year, our preschools twice a year, we inspect
the school lunch program. They're in there inspecting that.
Inspecting all the time, and the zoo The zoo, the St. Louis Zoo, gets inspected once a year.
Well, maybe we should send the people that want an abortion to the St. Louis Zoo because we know it'll be safer.
You know, it's funny you say that, Senator, and that's another line of questioning I wanted to point out. So the senator from Callaway and the senator from Green both told stories about their visits to abortion clinics, which weren't as bad as Kermit Grosnell's Shop of Horrors in Philadelphia, but for want of a better word, it was a conditions that they described were appalling, okay? So I worked during my medical training in animal research facilities, and I'm sure the same is true in the zoo. You could eat off the floor.
Yes.
Things were clean, things are sanitary, the animals are well taken care of. Again, they're inspected regularly. They have high, high standards of how they take care of those animals. But yet, suggest that on this floor that we ought to be protecting women by inspecting abortion clinics. And I have to say, some of the abortion doctors are some of the real dregs of our profession. I mean, it's people who have lost licenses, so they travel from state to state, and their gig is doing abortions.
Senator,
there are exceptions to that. There may be some exceptions to that in St. Louis.
I carried a similar bill that you have right now. Might have been 3 years ago. I'm not sure. And it was about the health inspections. And I thought, well, who can be against health inspections?
Right.
Yeah. You know, it's a common sense thing. Restaurants do it. Hospitals do it. Zoos do it.
Zoos do it.
So, and I thought, who's going to come up and testify in opposition? It's going to be interesting to see. Well,
such
you can
common
imagine
sense. It's just
the first
sense.
One up was Narol. And you know what their opening statement was?
What?
That this would hurt women's health.
Is
that absurd?
You know, if it would hurt women's health, I'm concerned then that the zoo is getting inspected annually because it might hurt zoo animal health that zoo animals have their facilities inspected regularly. It obviously reflects irrational prejudice against zoos, right?
Yes.
You know what? Another thing I learned about zoos, there was discussion last night about the bill passed 3 years ago. Sponsored by the senator from Barrie, I wish he were here, about the 72-hour waiting period.
Yes.
I learned that zoos have a waiting period.
They do.
They do.
I didn't know that,
They do.
Senator.
Before you can euthanize a zoo animal, you have... How long do you think the waiting period is?
Well...
I mean, okay, babies...
I would think
okay,
it'd
baby,
be
let's,
probably
let's,
no more than 24 hours.
Yeah, let's think about this. Babies, it's, you know, 3 days.
Right.
So although there are members of this body who don't agree with that 3 days, babies are 3 days, so zoo animals, it couldn't be more than 24 hours, right?
I think. Yeah, I mean, you know, you have to get the proper approval and make sure you have the proper equipment and that. So 24 hours would probably be adequate.
5 days, Senator. 5 days.
5 days.
5 days. So, yeah. And I
two days more than an actual human being's life.
Yes. And I believe there's some sort of requirement that you notify in case some other zoo wants to adopt that animal. So, isn't that interesting?
So
changing the tourism motto of the city of St. Louis, At first I kind of came up with it. I meant it in jest. But as I got into it more, I thought, St. Louis City, where we protect our zoo animals, but it's open season on alternatives to abortion centers and pro-life organizations. I think that
sounds like we have things out of whack.
I think we have things out of whack. I think we do. You know, we all love our zoo. I mean, don't get me wrong, but you know, we I think we have things out of whack. I think we have things out of whack.
You know, Senator.
Hey, you know what though? The zoo had a whole lobbying arm. They sent some of the leading lights of St. Louis industry here because we were on the zoo board, and they applied a lot of pressure. I'm not, you know, last year they tried, by the way, last year they tried to sneak the zoo tax into a committee substitute, an education committee substitute. They just tried to sneak it through hoping no one would notice, except I was on the education committee. Now, the lobbying firm that's handling the zoo tax this year has been much more forthright and has been much better at communicating with opponents and trying to get folks on board. But at a certain point I said, you know, we can't pass... We can't pass legislation to protect government workers who are in unions. You know, in 1959, the LM Act, Labor Management Reporting Act, was passed. Do you remember the movie On the Waterfront with Marlon Brando?
Yes.
Remind me
again.
So Marlon Brando, young Marlon Brando, this is what put him on the map as far as the acting. Marlon Brando played a dock worker who was battling corruption.
Is that something about Waterfront or something?
3, Senator Standing, Senator from the 14th, what purpose do you seek recognition?
Mr. President, I seek unanimous consent to introduce some very special guests.
Hearing no objection. You may proceed, Senator.
Thank you so much, Mr. President. To my right and to your left, we have 4 students from St. Louis University who are here to advocate for their issues that they're talking about today. And one of the people who is here today is a very, very special guest. And the reason why is because when no one else showed up to Ferguson, she showed up to Ferguson. And she stood up and she wears the tag, White Folk Work, in a very, very prideful way. And I am so proud to introduce my personal friend, Brenna Whitehurst, as well as her colleagues in college, Jacqueline Turbrock, Shay Lanigan, and Danielle Christopher, if they would all please be welcomed by this
body. Guests of the Senate from the 14th please rise, and with the members of the Senate chamber, please welcome them to this chamber. Senator, you may proceed.
Yes, so Senator, we were talking about my Government Worker Protection Act, House Bill 251, and on the waterfront, mid-1950s, Marlon Brando played a young dock worker who, first, it's a long story, but he was involved in the mob, he was a boxer, he threw a fight. His famous line was, "I could have been a champion." But he eventually went to work as a longshoreman and dock worker, and basically he stumbled upon rampant corruption in the longshoreman's union, and his brother ended up dead and hung on a meat hook, and anyway he persisted in his fight and in the end triumphed, but union corruption was so rampant in the late 40s, 50s, quite honestly, embezzlement of union dues, union worker funds, that in 1959 Congress passed the LM Reporting Act to require financial reporting of unions, private sector unions. So Teamsters, electrical workers, and so on, carpenters, are protected by the fact that that workers can get a hold of the financial records of their unions and make sure their money is being spent properly. Well, public sector workers do not have those protections. Groups that we really care about, teachers and firefighters, police, SEIU workers, sure. AFSCME workers who might be working in state government, their unions get to operate behind this veil of secrecy that we would never, ever tolerate in the private sector union context. So anyway, the minority party filibustered that bill. I eventually laid it over. And of course, your pro-life bill, I don't even call it a pro-life bill, your First Amendment bill.
Yes.
Your bill to protect alternatives to abortion organizations, religious organizations, from devastating
freedom of speech,
from devastating lawsuits,
their religious and moral convictions.
Preserve yes. their right to free speech, preserve their freedom of religion. That bill was likewise filibustered, and my Clinic Safety and Women's Protection Act likewise was filibustered, and yet we have time to discuss taxing the St. Louis metro area to support a zoo, and to keep the zoo free. It's ironic because ordinarily when we're in committee hearings and we talk about sales taxes, we talk about sales taxes being the most regressive of taxes. The poorest of people still have to pay the sales tax, and yet somehow that's the preferred mechanism of funding our zoos. But I just think it's disproportionate. We cannot protect government workers from their funds being embezzled. We cannot protect religious people people who want to give women in a very hard way an alternative to terminating the pregnancy. And we cannot even inspect clinics annually. Okay, that's how entrenched the minority party is. And they abuse the filibuster in all three of those reasons. Because if they were working for, in the situations, if they were working for a compromise, they would have brought us amendments and we would have worked through some stuff. No, they were saying, no, we cannot protect government union workers. We cannot protect the speech of religious people who happen to commit the sin of believing differently on life issues than they. And we cannot have clinic inspections. And yet we have tons of floor time for a zoo tax. Well, and again, the senator from the 13th did lay that bill over, but I think it deserves some discussion. But, Senator, thank you so much for your inquiry, and I do have some other senators I want to talk to, but thank you for your inquiry.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. President?
Senator from the 2nd, what purpose do you rise?
Inquire of the senator from the 8th if he is in the chamber.
Senator from the 8th is in the chamber. Senator from the 8th, you yield to an inquiry from the senator from the 2nd.
I do.
You may proceed, Senator.
Thank you, Senator. Senator, I really think there are some issues that are so important that they need discussion. And I think the St. Louis Metro region, because it would extend, as originally filed, would extend all the way out into my district in far western St. Charles County. The citizens of my county have been called freeloaders by the proponents of the bill. Given that this is an important issue, I was really disappointed when we didn't go to that bill this morning. Last year, a lobbyist for the zoo tried to sneak it through on a committee sub on an education bill.
Oh, really?
Okay. As I said at the time, not a way to win friends and influence people, right? And then, of course, when this bill was filed this session, the bill was filed without the senator in question even telling me that a bill was going to be filed to tax my district. The lobbyists had communicated with me, but that senator had it. But then again, once in a while, I file some things that senator doesn't like. So I all is forgiven there.
Right.
But, Senator, I understand that Kansas City has a zoo tax.
Yes,
and
talk about this bill real quick.
Yeah,
what
please.
What committee did this sales tax go through?
It was the, I forget the exact name, but the Progress Committee.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you think maybe it should have gone through maybe like the Ways and Means Committee?
You know, that's a good point. It is a tax bill.
Right.
And I don't know of any sales tax bill that's ever gone to any committee other than Ways and Means.
I was a little disappointed that I didn't get to see it in committee because I obviously chair that committee. But yes, the Kansas City Zoo does have a sales tax. I was in the House when it passed, and it then went to the vote of the people.
Yeah.
And now the Kansas City Zoo is different than St. Louis Zoo in the aspect of it charges admission.
Oh,
so it's not even a free zoo, and now they get a 1%, I think it's a 1% tax. Don't quote me on the exact
amount. You know, I don't want to interrupt, Senator, but, you know, do you know how many zoos in the country are free?
I do not.
You know, it's actually very few. You know, and again, I can never say something that the government or some quasi-governmental agency provides is free without thinking of the PJ O'Rourke. If you think your health care is expensive now, just wait till it's free. So there are three zoos in the country that are technically free, although one constituent of mine said the last time I went to the free St. Louis Zoo, it cost my family $100. By the time you pay for parking, you get a snow cone, you ride on the train, you go to the Children's Museum, you want to see the puffins and penguins, it's not very free anymore. But anyway, there are actually three. One is St. Louis. One is Washington, D.C., which undoubtedly gets a ton of federal money, so I don't know if that counts. And there's a third, and I forget which one it is. But every other zoo in the country does charge an admission. But tell me a little more about the Kansas City Zoo.
The thing that gets me about it is when I was in the House when this came through, and I wish we would have stopped it then, but now I'm paying for it. Just like you would be paying for this one. I live in Eastern Jackson County, not in Kansas City, and we're paying the 1% tax.
And it's a sales tax, too?
It is a sales tax.
You know,
what's a little bit different, though, is you have to pay to get in, and you have to pay for 1% tax.
Okay, right.
So it's a little different in our aspect, but right. I'm not.
So you're kind of double non-freeloading.
Right. Yeah. I actually am frustrated with the local governments continuing to pass these taxes.
Our
state sales tax is 4.22.
Right.
Just over 4 cents. And the local taxes are right now getting it to the point where they're exceeding 10%. So I believe that we've got to do something to keep the local entities from continuing to raise the sales tax. Every time we turn around, the public safety sales tax, 1% there. And yeah. So we really need to be, we as the General Assembly, really need to be looking at these taxes to hold down the local entities from continuing to raise taxes on our constituents.
You know, I was so busy working on, you know, some other issues yesterday that I didn't. So there were two major tax increases in the St. Louis metro area. I don't know how those fared. There was a Proposition P that was for law enforcement, and then I believe there was one for Scott Trade Center.
I'm hearing from the 14th that passed.
That they passed. Okay. So we have more taxes.
I'm telling you, we had some local stuff in my area, and I think every one of the questions passed.
You know, and of course, law enforcement is a legitimate function of government. But, you know, what really bothers me is the proliferation of non-for-profits coming for their own, looking for their own dedicated funding source.
Mm-hmm.
That offends me. I think in general, non-for-profits raise money by getting donations from their members, or from their supporters. And so in St. Charles, I'll just give an example close to home. In St. Charles County, we have a special tax for a children's resource board. And, you know, who's ever going to vote against a tax for the kids, right?
Right.
So they vote, you know, it was voted in.
Mm-hmm.
And the county executive actually appointed my wife, Allison, to the board. So we know a lot about this board. But the bottom line is, for want of a better word, it's a little slush fund. Mm-hmm. Every year, the various organizations come to the board with their hands out and ask for money. And most of these organizations, you've heard of some of them, some of them I've supported and some of them I've written my own checks to, but they come looking for money, and they make their case. And these, most of these have very large, vigorous donor bases. Many of them also get public money directly. Many of them also are eligible for various state tax credits, and yet they also have a separate sales tax. So this proliferation of sales taxes, I remember the former senior senator from St. Charles, Senator Dempsey, we were talking about one particular sales tax, and he said, you know, this is why the transportation sales tax couldn't, you know, was destined to fail, because we have increased so many taxes so high.
Right.
So to me, you know, in the St. Louis Zoo in St. Louis is in this Zoo Museum district. And five entities share a property tax right now. The St. Louis Zoo, the Science Center, the History Museum, the Art Museum, and the Botanical Garden. And I asked the lobbyist for the zoo tax. I said, next year you're going to be down and asking for the Botanical Garden tax? How about the next year for the Science Center tax? I love the Science Center. It's a great regional,
right,
regional institution. Although if we do pass a Science Center tax, it's in the city of St. Louis too. I think we need to change it from St. Louis Science Center to the Midwest Abortion Sanctuary City Science Center. Because that's undoubtedly the brand, that's the branding that the city of St. Louis is going for. And the city of St. Louis's allies here in this body have defeated, you know, they've defeated, at least for the time, Senate Bill 41, mm-hmm, offered by the senator from Cape Girardeau. But that's the brand St. Louis City is going for. They, you know, our taxes aren't high enough, and we don't have enough abortions. And heaven forbid that we let people who are trying to give women an alternative to terminating their pregnancy.
Uh-huh.
So that's what the city of St. Louis is doing, and I guess they succeeded in passing more tax increases. You know, it's funny, the prosecutor in the city of St. Louis is a former state rep. She was given oh, I forget the number, but I believe it was over $100,000 by a George Soros-funded PAC. Yeah. And, of course, this Board Bill 203, the Abortion Sanctuary City Bill, is a top narrow priority, National Abortion Rights Action League priority. So, you know, I'm not sure who's running the show in the city of St. Louis anymore. You know, it's a long day. You know, the first political figure I actually ever campaigned for was Dick Gephardt.
Oh, really?
Dick Gephardt back then was a pro-life, pro-Second Amendment, conservative Democrat. I think I was like in seventh or eighth grade at the time. And that's where I thought I was on the political spectrum. As Ronald Reagan once said, I didn't leave the party. The party left me.
Mm-hmm.
But I think by the time it was midway through high school, I was a Reagan Republican. Dick Gephardt. We've come a long way from Dick Gephardt, to Narrow and George Soros by our elections. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's really sad. But I think really if the city is going to go down this route, I don't.
Well, I think you've sent a pretty loud message here today, saying, "Hey, the zoo tax is on my radar, and as long as I'm in this body, this is what you speaking that it's going to have problems getting through here."
Yeah,
and I think that's a good message to send.
Yeah.
I regret not stopping the Kansas City zoo tax. It's there. It's implemented. We'll never get it taken away.
Yeah, I really think, and again, the senator from the 8th, I don't have anything against her bill, but ninth. I don't have anything against her bill per se, but I think it's a priority of how this body spends its time. You know, we have carte blanche to block bills that reform various aspects of our labor law. We have carte blanche to block pro-life bills. We have carte blanche to block amendments, bills to protect Second Amendment rights.
Senator, I think all of those things drive people to the table for the negotiations.
I
think that I'm in great belief that we get something that's going to protect abortions from happening in the state of Missouri and further restrict them from happening. And I know that the Senate, I haven't really looked at the senator from the 9th bill. I don't even know what that topic. We haven't talked about that topic
so far.
I'd
love to talk about that later on.
Senator has a desire to get that done.
All day and all night. You know, I think we went till 1 a.m. on the senator from Cape bill. We went very late one night on House Bill 52. So, you know, I think that's good. Well, I appreciate the inquiry, Senator, and thank you very much.
All right, thank you, Senator.
Mr. President.
Senator from the 2nd, purpose you rise.
To inquire of the Senator from the 23rd.
Senator from the 23rd. Senator from the 23rd does not appear to be in the chamber. Sergeant of Arms, please summons the Senator from the 23rd to the chamber. Senator from Webster, purpose to you rise.
Thank you, Mr. President. I seek unanimous consent to introduce a special guest. Perfect time to do it while we're waiting on the Senator from the 23rd.
Hearing no objection, you may proceed, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, seated on your right and on my left is Chief Keith Fallon. And Keith is very instrumental. Last year we passed a bill, this body passed a great bill that helped fund cover the work comp costs for rural fire departments, which are really struggling to survive. And Keith was very instrumental. We visited about it and came up with this, and he's very instrumental, and I appreciate him bringing it to my attention. We'd like for Keith to stand and the body to make him feel welcome, please.
Let's please welcome the guest from the Senator from Webster to the Missouri Senate Chamber. Senator from Barry, what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. A point of personal privilege, unanimous consent, please.
Senator from Barry seeks a point of personal privilege. Senator, you may proceed.
I would just like to announce that last night in my district, in the town of Goodman, Missouri, which is just south of also of our President Pro Tem's district, that a tornado went through that town and completely destroyed the school that they have there. And it destroyed numerous homes, damaged the fire department there. And but fortunately, it was good news that nobody was seriously injured. And so I'm thankful for that. But those people were going to be having the, it's a very small community, and those kids are going to have to be transported probably to other schools, and so they'll have some logistics to work out. But I just wanted to know that, you know, we're kind of in Tornado Alley down there, and that happens, but thankfully nobody got hurt. Thank you.
We will keep the people of that town in our thoughts and our prayers. Senator from the 23rd, the senator from the first is, or for the second is requesting an inquiry of you. Do you yield to that inquiry?
I do, Mr. President.
Senator from the second, you may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator, we were discussing, just going over the last couple days. So the, let's go back a little farther. You know, on November 8th, I think the people of Missouri spoke pretty loudly, pretty clearly, that they didn't want business as usual anymore. The Republican presidential candidate won Missouri by 20 points. Every single statewide elected official of your and my party was elected, some by very large margins. Supermajorities were returned to the Capitol. A pro-life governor was elected, a governor who ran on right to work and repealing Missouri's outdated prevailing wage laws to get construction and get economic development, especially in rural Missouri, going again. And we now have, and in the last two or three weeks, we had a bill to protect government workers who happen to be members of unions from requiring financial reporting so that their dues money wouldn't be embezzled by corrupt union bosses. That was filibustered by the minority party. Then two nights ago, the senator from Cape Girardeau had a bill I hesitate to even call it a pro-life bill because in a sense it didn't have really much to do with abortion. It had to do with the First Amendment, the right to religious freedom. To reverse, as the senator from Cape put it, we're on defense here, not on offense. The Board of Aldermen, St. Louis Board of Aldermen, declared open season. It's open season. There's no bag limit, Senator, on those people of faith, those pro-life people who would seek to provide an alternative to women seeking an abortion or in a difficult pregnancy, to provide support, to provide resources, to provide emotional material, medical materials, spiritual support to those who seek not to terminate their pregnancy. And the minority party filibustered it. And last night, my bill, the Women's Health and Clinic Safety Act, was on the floor for a little while, and the minority party filibustered it. They wouldn't even let their own amendments come to a vote. They blocked and filibustered the amendment by the Representative from Johnson. They offered a substitute amendment that I don't even think was a true substitute. The senator from the first urged us to grovel and to acquiesce to the decree of the judge out of the Western District a trial court in Kansas City, and completely rewrite our pro-life laws. Because one judge doesn't like them. So, Senator, I just so now where are we? We're not on We're not on government worker protection. We're not on freedom of conscience for crisis pregnancy centers. We're not on the Women's Health and Clinic Protection Act. We were due for zoo tax, an issue that you and I have discussed at some length previously, and I want to discuss with you a little bit today. But we're not on any. We're not on any of those things. We're on the. Zoo tax was on the calendar. We kind of have a goofy calendar system. I never know what bill's going to come up any given day, so I try to be ready for everything. But you know, it's funny. People all around the world are watching live feed of a giraffe about to give birth. But if that, I have a question for you. What do you call the fetal giraffe inside the womb of the mama giraffe? What do you call that?
I don't have that answer, Senator.
I think I'd probably call it a baby giraffe.
Baby giraffe, yes.
I guess it's a fetal giraffe. I guess you could call it the products of conception. I guess you could call it a blob of tissue. But in any case, so the reason that it was so poignant that we were discussing zoos the day after the minority party was blocking a bill to protect women is that, you know, there are a lot of provisions in zoo regulatory law that protect zoo animals. Now, for instance, I mean you'll be appalled to learn this: there are annual inspections. Annual inspections.
The annual inspections we were talking about last night?
Well,
Similar annual inspections?
Last night we were talking about annual inspections to protect the health and safety of human children and human women. But no. That would be anti woman's right to choose, or however they put it. So, you know, I guess these provisions in the zoo regulatory scheme, they must be anti-zoo. There's no rational reason to inspect zoos other than you're trying to put zoos out of business, right, Senator?
Well, certainly, do we need to strip some of those inspection requirements from the zoo statutes to protect?
You know,
they're not the rights of the draft.
It's a good point, Senator. And those aren't, of course, those aren't state requirements. I believe they're federal. But I think what we can do, since there is already an authorized zoo property tax, what we can do is, on the condition that those inspections be gotten rid of, or that the zoo must leave the regulatory organization that requires these onerous annual inspections, or else deauthorize their property tax. You know, maybe that would be a good bill for next session.
Senator,
maybe we could even get it on an amendment on something this session.
Well, Senator, as I'm listening to you, you said those were federal regulations to protect the inspection process for the drafts.
I think it's either federal, or it might be a national organization that the zoo belongs to. But yeah.
Do you feel like there may be a problem with the choices we're making if our federal government is more concerned about the rights and protections of the draft versus the women citizens of our state?
I think our priorities probably are out of whack. I think they are.
Well, I don't mean to cut off your line of questions here, Senator,
yes.
But I can't help, when I was listening to this debate last night, I think you said something you said very early on is that this is not even so much a pro-life issue as it is a constitutional protection issue.
And you and I have always
discussed the idea that the role of government is to protect the rights of the citizens. Everything else is tyranny.
That's right.
And we have instances in both of the bills that we've seen over the past two nights where an attempt is being made to protect the rights of the citizens in different ways. First, in the senator from Cape Girardeau's bill, we were protecting the right of individuals to provide alternatives to abortion services, which is I think there's a freedom of speech question there. There are a number of issues that you've identified. Last night, we were trying to protect the health and safety of women in this state. who may be getting a procedure that, as you and I have discussed before, presents many health dangers that are not being addressed or protected by current law.
Well, that's right. In fact, one of the participants in the debate last night, I believe the senator from the 24th, scoffed. She was offended that I even mentioned the complications of abortion. Now, you know, if I were a surgeon removing your gallbladder and I didn't mention things like bleeding and infection and so on, I would be committing medical malpractice. But the idea that any mention is ever made about any mention that's ever made about complications of abortion, and then maybe we should hold abortion clinics to the same standards that other healthcare facilities are held to. That is just met with derision and disdain, Senator.
I don't understand, Senator. Was there any explanation of why we wouldn't want to provide this protection to the women citizens of our state?
I cannot think of any. It's my understanding our colleague from Cole County, he wants to introduce a guest, so I will let him go ahead and do that.
Three senators standing. Senator from Cole, what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. I apologize to my colleagues for interrupting their debate. I would seek unanimous consent to introduce a very special guest.
Hearing no objection, you may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. To my right and your left, Mr. President, it's my pleasure this morning to introduce Delaney White. She is a student here in Jefferson City at Simonson Ninth Grade Center. Delaney is our Jefferson City Boys and Girls Club Youth of the Year, Mr. President. She is an outstanding young woman who was selected to represent Jefferson City for her dedication to her education and to the club, and we wish her all the best in the statewide competition next week. Delaney is here with her mother, Dee, and Paris Lewis of the local Boys and Girls Club, which is about to get a new home here in Jefferson City, a beautiful building the community has built for them. And I'd ask that you make Delaney and Dee and Paris feel welcome in the Missouri Senate today.
Let's please welcome the guests from the Senator from Cole to the Missouri Senate chamber. Senator from the 11th, three senators standing. What purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. I seek unanimous consent for an introduction of special guests.
Hearing no objection, you may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. In the gallery to your right is a good friend of mine, Charlie Passantino, and his daughter Nina, who is down here today with the 8th grade class, I believe, from St. Teresa's. And if we could all make them feel welcome for their visit down here today, I would appreciate it.
Would the guest of the Senator from the 11th please rise, and would the members of the Senate chamber please welcome them to this chamber. Three senators standing. Senator from Buchanan, what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. I would request unanimous consent for the introduction of special guests.
Hearing no objection, you may proceed, Senator.
Mr. President, to your right and to my left on the couch over here, we have some eighth graders from St. Therese School in Kansas City. Here in the chamber, we have a school official, Bill Friend, but on the couch, we have Sage Nichols, Grant Strathopoulos, and Anna Cernich. And I would ask that they be made honorary pages for the day to serve without compensation.
They will be made honorary pages for the day. And would the guests from the Senate from Buchanan please rise, and would the members of the Senate chamber please make them welcome. Senator from the second, you may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. Taxes, it seems like, have you kept track of how many tax increases passed on Election Day yesterday?
An absurd number of taxes, particularly given the fact, Senator, that right now the people of Missouri are sending more of their tax dollars to one government agency or another than they ever have before in the history of this state.
Yes.
And every And you know you're touching on a topic that I am passionate
about. I know. I bet you could talk at length about that.
I can, because...
You know, at some point we may break for committee, but I really look forward to after committee talking more about that.
Well, and I think to go quickly back to something that you mentioned, Senator, which was on November 8th, the message that I believe that the voters sent, and that was my first election.
Right.
And I believe, I'm interpreting the message that the people sent us, that they would like us to do business in a different manner.
Right.
That they would like us to move away from the policies that we have governed ourselves under for the past 100-plus years and move towards new ideas and new ways of getting the people's business done. And in a very large part, the money that we spend on behalf of the people is a critical and core component of what the government does. That's actually our prime constitutional duty, is how we spend the taxpayer money. And if the constituents that I speak with are very unhappy with, they don't feel like we're properly funding our public education system, we're not taking care of our roads, we're not doing a lot of the things that the people believe we should have been doing for a lot of time, and now here we are, every time they go to the ballot box, whether it's a state initiative or not, they're being asked for more and more sacrifice.
Right. And, you know, I don't know about you, but when you were knocking on doors, when you were talking to, how many doors did you knock on, Senator?
About 35,000. I need to start knocking more for my figure, Senator.
There you go. There you go. I don't think even I knocked on quite that many. Senator, how many voters told you, you know, Senator, when you go to Jeff City, I just want to make sure you raise taxes.
Zero. Not a single one of them.
But wait a second. We're not raising tax. If we passed the zoo tax or when this legislature passed the Kansas City zoo tax, let's be straight. We're not raising taxes. We're just giving the people the opportunity to raise their taxes. I don't know. Do you buy that line of argument?
Senator, I know where you're going. You know, you and I, what the folks listening do not understand is that you and I have had this conversation. I believe that any authorization is an acknowledgement that a tax increase of some sort is important. And if you are against raising taxes, you don't vote for or support authorizations for other people to raise taxes.
That's right.
So I'm very comfortable with the idea that if you are against the expansion of government, which I am through an objective measure, which is the amount of money that the government is spending, we don't support increases to taxes or authorizations to tax.
Yeah, I'm with you there, Senator. And, you know, again, I think, you know, Senator from the 8th said that, you know, we are sending a clear message here. I think one of those messages probably needs to be to the zoo people, the zoo lobbyists, don't come back, okay? But I think another message that I want to send is a message about priorities. We could not protect government union workers from embezzlement of their dues money 2 weeks ago. We could not protect crisis pregnancy centers from oppression by the jackboot of government 2 nights ago. And last night, we cannot do inspections and other sensible regulations to prevent the trafficking in fetal organ tissue. We can't do any of that. But, you know, this legislature has spent a little time, and I've been forced to spend a fair amount of energy on this topic of creating a regressive tax. Sales taxes are generally by economists of all political persuasions, left, right, or center, thought to be regressive taxes. To impose a regressive tax on the people of our entire metro area, and I'm talking about the as filed bill. There were talks about compromises and so forth, and that's all fine and well, but. But we were told that in St. Charles County and Franklin County and Jefferson County, we were freeloaders. And for that matter, I guess the people in St. Louis City and St. Louis County were freeloaders, too, because they weren't given enough money to the St. Louis Zoo, so they have a tax. But, you know, I want to talk about another aspect of this zoo bill, the economic development aspect of the zoo, of this bill. You know, because frequently we get asked to raise taxes or provide tax credits in the name of economic development, and I think that's part of the purpose of the zoo, because there was all this talk about infrastructure that needed to be rebuilt in the zoo and all that. And it occurs to me that we don't tax and spend ourselves into prosperity, that if we really want to do something to to create prosperity in the state of Missouri, create a building boom in the state of Missouri, there's something very simple we can do, which is, as our governor said in his State of the State address, we could repeal our prevailing wage laws, also known as the state equivalent of Davis-Bacon laws. And we could talk about Davis-Bacon, because what prevailing wage laws do is require that rural counties, rural cities, towns, libraries, fire districts, police departments, sheriff's departments, have to overpay. They have to pay a falsely elevated wage for all the projects done in that district. And many, many rural elected officials have told me that if we repeal our prevailing wage, we can then really get a boom. They can start doing some of those projects. And that would be the best thing you could do for economic development in their county. Senator, have we had any floor time for prevailing wage reform or repeal here this Senate?
No, Senator, I don't believe we have.
Yeah.
And actually, you bring up a really good point. And one of the state issues that are facing us that will be directly affected by that, the outcome of that discussion, is the conversation that surrounds our roads and bridges.
Yes.
The cost associated, and I owned a construction firm, so I'm familiar with these increasing costs, the costs associated that are going up to maintain the network of thousands of bridges, tens of thousands of roadway miles, it's only getting worse. And this is a discussion that would, I think, further along our ability to meet something. Now, you asked me if anybody in my district asked me to raise taxes. The answer was no. But the number of people that asked me to do something about our roads without raising taxes and without introducing the concept of toll roads, which are additional ways to ask for sacrifice from the consumer, I had a large number of folks that wanted to talk about that felt like this was a crisis that was never getting solved. And I think that the discussion about prevailing wage is a worthy one, and I look forward to that discussion here in this body.
Yeah, I think it's a really important discussion. I think it is a joke if we even so much as use the word economic development in any other context in this body if we don't get serious about repeal of our outdated prevailing wage laws. And you know, not only are our prevailing wage laws outdated, you know the history, Davis-Bacon, they're historically racist. Because Davis and Bacon, I forget the first names of those two gentlemen, I hate to use that term, but their concern was that rural African Americans were coming up from the Old South and competing against white union workers for jobs. And so they thought about, how can we do this? How can we protect against this? You know, as if Jim Crow aren't enough. What they did was they said, you know, we're just going to require, we're going to come up with this scheme where the required wage on public construction projects will be the union wage. And then, of course, those who are doing the hiring in government or whatever, lest they create union unrest, political pushback, hey, follow the path of least resistance. As long as we're paying the union wage, we might as well hire all union labor. And it continues to this day. I mean, this is a decades old law. It doesn't make any sense. Now, Senator, do you know, I mean, neither you nor I serve on the Appropriations Committee, but is Missouri flush with money this year, or are we needing to tighten our belts a little bit?
Well, I think that that's there's two actions. Let me give you two answers to that question.
Yeah.
One, I would say that we have more money in the state of Missouri today as far as taxpayer dollars that we're going to appropriate than ever before.
Well, that is true.
So I think that from the taxpayers' perspective, I think that they rightfully should feel that as if they are making plenty of sacrifice already so that the folks here in Jefferson City can meet the demands and priorities that they've laid out. Now, that being said, every dollar that has already come into the state is already accounted for by one measure or another, whether it's going through the appropriations process or coming to the floor. So I think that even though the people have done their part to provide the necessary resources that we can meet the limited requirements of government, we as a legislative body, the General Assembly, has already pre-identified where we want every one of those dollars to go. So when we have additional interests and strains on that budgetary process, that's a real problem.
Yeah, I know. There is a good amount of money there, but you don't believe so much that we ought to be, you know, have schemes to on purpose overpay.
Let me put it in this way, a little bit different context. In spite of all that money coming in, Senator, we still have not been able to address our roads. We still have problems with our veterans and our VA facilities around the state. Even with all that money, we're struggling to meet the priorities that the people have laid out. So I don't believe, I have a hard time allocating dollars to additional projects anywhere before we've even taken record amounts of money to address the needs of the state as the people have already laid them out.
I don't think anyone could disagree with that. I don't think anyone could disagree with that. Okay, Senator. Well, Senator, I know you were in a meeting, and I apologize for interrupting you from that meeting. Maybe we'll break for committee sooner. Maybe I'll be here all night. I will be here all night. I'm happy to do that. Certainly, my colleagues on the other side of the aisle have done that for me a number of occasions. So I'm more than happy to do that for them. But there's just a lot we've got to discuss. Mm-hmm. I think most of all we need to discuss priorities and what we're going to do between now and the end of session. I think time spent on zoo bills or bills to legalize formerly illegal controlled substances, I think that distracts from what we really need to get done for the state of Missouri. So no, I thank you for the inquiry. Mr. President.
Senator from the second, what purpose do you rise?
To inquire of the Senator from Barton.
Senator from Barton. Senator from Barton, you yield to an inquiry from the Senator from the second.
I do, Mr. President.
Senator from the second, you may proceed.
Thank you. Thank you for the inquiry, Senator. Senator, yesterday I know there were things that you would have liked to have added, discussed in the debate that you didn't quite make it to the floor on time to share those with the body, and I was thinking this because I think you would agree with me that the fundamental purpose of government is to protect life and liberty.
Absolutely.
Nothing wrong with zoos or urban gardens or some of the other things we do. But we laid over the senator from Cape Girardeau's bill in response to a filibuster on Monday night, and we laid over his bill was to protect our First Amendment liberties, protect those who would seek to give women in a difficult circumstance an alternative to terminating their pregnancy. Last night we gave some time, but then we laid over my bill, which would have sought to require annual inspections, something that is required of restaurants, as the senator from Cape pointed out, of nursing homes twice a year, child care centers twice a year, and zoos every year. But that got laid over, facing opposition from the other side of the aisle. And I think we have a number of important issues, education reform, labor reform, that have met with some opposition, what was on the calendar today, and we have a kind of crazy calendar system that I don't know what's coming up next.
So I'm
looking down the calendar two or three. I now have a sort of pseudo calendar that's kind of fluid. So I have some other things I've got to prepare for. But you know what? Time we spend talking about this is stuff I don't, you know, I, that, you know, we won't get to unless we come to a deal where the filibuster isn't abused.
Right.
What we were elected to do by supermajorities, what we were elected to do, we're allowed to do. If you've heard the phrase, the tyranny of the minority, and
sure.
I think that's where we are right now. But, Senator, I know you had some perspectives on the life issues we were discussing last night.
One of the things that I think I've heard you say, we're all entitled to our opinion, but we're not entitled to our own set of facts.
Yes.
And I hear debate on the floor where it seems like what we're hearing is someone's own set of the facts. That always concerns me, and there's yes. always the temptation to say, wait a minute, I want to correct that. And of course, because of the processes in the Senate, we don't always have an opportunity to do that.
Right.
And because of the rules of the Senate, sometimes we want rather than to get up later and maybe we've resolved an issue and are ready to vote on it and to raise something then because we're ready to go ahead and complete the job, complete
right.
the work on that particular piece of legislation. But right. Because of some of the things that were said, I looked up some statistics. I looked
well,
up
as
some
you know,
facts.
Those, as you know, those opposing the bill many times just take the floor and just take the you know they don't interact with the bill sponsor.
Right.
They don't offer amendments sincerely and then come to votes on those amendments. They just use the amendments as an excuse to tie up the floor as a filibuster technique.
Sure.
And so, so that's you know that, and that's disturbing. So after a while, what you get usually is about an hour, maybe a half hour, an hour of decent debate,
right.
And then you you get you know anywhere from 2 hours to 38 hours of time killing.
Right, and I do think it's important that we have the honest exchange, and
absolutely.
I appreciate the inquiries you've been made. You're a physician, and you know. You know, some of the things that happen in that arena, and so you are familiar with health care. You are familiar with what's important to the health of a woman. You are familiar with the processes that some of us have conceptually from abortion, but you probably have a clearer picture than we do.
Right.
I looked up some of the numbers, and since 1973, Senator, the number of African-American deaths associated with AIDS was about 245,000 since 1973.
245,000
that have died as a result of AIDS. Now, there's been a larger number that have died as a result of crime, of violent crime. There have been about 354,000 African Americans who have died as a result of crime. There have been almost 448,000 that have died as a result of accidents. I'm sure that includes automobile accidents and industrial accidents. The real kicker here, Senator, when you get to cancer, you know, today's Cancer Awareness Day, and we're trying to raise that awareness. We're trying to focus as much attention in your particular practice area of medicine on trying to come up with cures and answers to that. We've seen since 1973 over 2.5 million deaths of African Americans, 2,568,000 rounded off. Heart disease is even a little worse than that, and we know that there are certain elements there that particularly attack that racial persuasion, and that's 2.7 million that have died as a result of heart disease, all since 1973. Senator, that's a total of 6.3 million deaths in that community, in that racial community. Senator, do you know how many deaths have occurred in that racial community as a result of abortions?
I do not, Senator.
15.5 million.
15.5 million
African-American babies have been slain in abortions in that same period of time.
That's startling. That's startling.
And without those numbers, we can talk about these things all day, but we really don't understand the significance of them when we talk about those impacts. Do you know how many racial deaths there were in the Holocaust, Jewish deaths?
Well, in Germany, there were 3 million. I'm sorry, 6 million.
6
million was the number.
6 million. 15.5 million, though, since 1973, African-American deaths of children that could have had unbelievable potential today in terms of changing the world. Senator, African-American babies are aborted at three times the rate of white babies, three
yes.
times the rate.
Yes,
It's actually been referred to as genocide by abortion.
Well, do you know,
by some.
Dave, have you met Zena Hackworth? Zena is an African-American woman who has an organization entitled something very provocative, and I'm probably going to get the exact name of the organization wrong, but something like, "You are committing genocide of my race." Yep. She's an African-American woman.
Right. I think it was Aleta King that actually used that same term.
Yes, yes. So, you know, again, it's a sensitive term that I don't think any of us use lightly.
Right.
But looking at those sorts of numbers, it's hard to call it anything but.
It is. I mean, and it's attack. And when we go to the roots, Senator, I've got some other information that might help us understand how we got there. But let me quote Martin Luther King. We just had Martin Luther King Day here at
yes.
the Capitol. We don't work on that day. We take that day
right.
off.
Right.
Not just recently. Martin Luther King said, "The Negro cannot win as long as he is willing to sacrifice the lives of his children for comfort and safety." That was Dr. Martin Luther King.
Now,
great
when,
man.
Now, when the Reverend King said that, was he talking about abortion?
He was talking about abortion.
He was talking about abortion.
Right.
Okay. Yes, there were a lot of other prominent African American leaders also who were pro-life.
Right.
Jesse Jackson actually at one time was pro-life. And the famous woman rights leader and suffragette Susan B. Anthony was
right.
pro-life.
Was pro-life.
So
Alveda King is Dr. Martin Luther King's niece. I don't know if you've
yes,
heard,
yes.
seen her. I know she's
yeah,
been on
her.
Television. She's a commentator. Often Alveda King said, "Every aborted baby is like a slave in the womb of his or her mother. The mother decides his or her fate." Now, I didn't use that term. That term can be very offensive to people.
Yes, it can be.
But
it
Alveda King was bold in her use of that term. That's the way she sees
that's the way
that
she,
act of abortion.
That's the way she sees it, yes.
Right, and she knows what she's talking
she
about.
Sees it.
She is an African-American woman. It's interesting, Senator, when we do ask the question, how did we get here? Why is this happening? And there are a lot of things that we could talk about. We could talk about the direction that political parties have taken, where the Republicans have been defenders or been in opposition to abortion for decades, and the fight that it took by Republicans to get abortion race relationships moving forward in the right direction, anti-slavery positions that finally prevailed. But Margaret Sanger, a lot of discussion has been here in terms of Planned Parenthood and defense of Planned Parenthood. I think it's interesting, Senator. Well, in fact, one other statistic that you may already know, I may have even heard you mention this, but did you know that 80% of abortion clinics are located in minority neighborhoods?
You know, I did know that statistic.
Yeah.
I'm not 80%. Sure. I'm not sure I ever said those words, but yes, that is very interesting. You know, and all businesses go to where they seek to find customers.
And again, that's back in that same genocide arena
right.
that was talked about by Alveda King and others. Senator, did you know that since 2007? There've in those abortion clinics, in those Planned Parenthood clinics, there have been 5,000 adoption processes that have been 5,000 adoptions that have been processed. Did you know
in
that? Do you know how many abortions have been processed?
Planned Parenthood clinics have actually, yeah, they do. They do like to say that they facilitate some adoptions.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
But how many abortions?
5,000 adoptions have been processed, 300,000 abortions in those same clinics.
5,000 to 300,000.
5,000 adoptions, 300,000 abortions in those same Planned Parenthood clinics. And it makes sense when you look back at the founder of Planned Parenthood, who was Margaret Sanger.
Right.
A lot of people have heard her name. I don't know how much they know about her. Margaret Sanger once said, "We do not want word to go out that what we want to exterminate the Negro population." That was Margaret
yes.
Sanger. That's a quote, direct quote from Margaret Sanger. I think it's right out of the book that she wrote, and I have the title of that here somewhere. I don't see it right now, but I mean that's who we're
yes,
talking
yes,
about
I know,
here.
I know that title. It'll come to me in a second. Well, Margaret Sanger, as you know, was not only a vicious racist, and again,
right.
just so anyone's listening, if they didn't hear it, Margaret Sanger is the founder of Planned Parenthood. When you see the Planned Parenthood lobbyists
right.
up here, they're the successor of Margaret Sanger.
Who focused on eugenics, who was a proponent of birth control, and her reason for birth control. Let me just read another quote from Margaret Sanger, Senator, because this will turn your stomach. Margaret Sanger said, Let's see if I can find it here. These are, and she was talking about, she wasn't just talking about African Americans here. She was talking about minorities. She was talking about immigrants. She was talking about the poor. She said, they are human weeds.
Yes.
Reckless breeders.
Yes.
Spawning human beings who never should have been born. That's the founder of Planned Parenthood, Senator.
Yes. Did she use the phrase useless eaters, or was that one of her successors who used that term?
I have this quote from her.
Yeah, Senator. Margaret Sanger. Yeah, Margaret.
1939, I think, or 39.
Margaret Sanger was a vicious racist. Margaret Sanger right. was a eugenicist. Margaret Sanger and Planned Parenthood was really the founder, was really the originator of the world eugenics movement. For obvious reasons, there's a lot of focus on what happened in Nazi Germany. But one thing that we should remember is that the road to the Holocaust began with her
advocacy of eugenics.
With Margaret Sanger and her colleagues' writings and advocacy on eugenics. First of all, the unfit. And the unfit meant anyone who was born with a handicap.
Right.
We had a little discussion of that in the health committee this morning. Anyone who has a handicap and is deemed unworthy of life, like if they have Down syndrome or some developmental disability, or let's say a congenital heart defect. My son Joseph has a congenital heart defect called hypoplastic left heart syndrome. Do you know what percentage of babies with that heart problem are diagnosed prenatally? What percentage of babies are aborted?
I don't.
About 60%. Do you know what the survival rate, if you're diagnosed prenatally with that defect and you're not aborted, do you know what your one-year survival is?
No.
It's close to 100%.
Wow.
It varies. But this is, by the way, Joseph is soon to celebrate his 15th birthday.
Right, and the name of the book that probably these are mostly from is a book that Margaret Sanger wrote is Pivot of Civilization.
That's right, Pivot of Civilization. Pivot of Civilization. Yeah, at one point I had that downloaded on an electronic device because some would doubt me that when I explained where Planned Parenthood explained the history of that Planned Parenthood abortion clinic on Forest Park Avenue. That some in this body sought to protect from ridiculous regulations like annual inspections.
Right. And Senator, I think one of the things that's important is back again to where we began here. You know, everybody can have their own opinion about what Margaret Sanger said about how important she is to their philosophical outlook and how they approach other people and other races, but you can't change the facts. You can't change what she did, what she said. You can't change the numbers and how they've impacted a particular race. And you can't change those. You have your own opinion. You may say, well, that's great. I'm fine with that. That's your opinion. You're welcome. You can have that. But you can't change the facts, Senator.
I think that's right, Senator. Well, thank you. I appreciate that. You know, I want to of course, I know that you have more than a passing interest in tax policy as well. And, I think yesterday was Municipal Election Day. I'm not really even sure we should have April elections. You know, typically you have a turnout of somewhere between 8% is and sometimes high, 8-10%.
I think, Senator, a lot of times because we don't see the huge nationwide elections on those, and people will look at that and they'll say, well, I don't really have an opinion. I don't know the people in that school board race. I don't know this. And so it's not important to me to go vote because I don't know how to vote. And I think you're right. And so they excuse it. They excuse that absence of voting, that lack of information, where you're right. If there's a more general election where they are interested in things, then maybe we would be a little bit more motivated to find out about those other races because
right.
we are going to vote.
I think that's right. So, you have a relatively small number of folks, often the special interests that will benefit from a given tax increase vote in large numbers.
Right. They'll show up.
They'll show up every time. And likewise, in some cases, people show up to elect their own bosses.
Right.
And so I think there's a problem inherent in that system, in that corruption. So undoubtedly, if this legislature authorized a zoo tax vote, undoubtedly that would be on an April election. I don't know how it would fare. I'm pretty sure, with tens, hundreds of thousands of dollars promoting a yes vote, and no concerted effort, maybe a couple of citizens with handwritten signs promoting a no vote, I think it would probably pass.
Three senators standing. Senator from the ninth, what purpose do you rise?
Thank you. Mr. President, this bill is about fresh produce for low-income seniors. I don't know how this discussion turned into a discussion of race. And with that, Mr. President, I'd like to lay this bill on the informal calendar.
That bill will be placed on the informal calendar. Senator from the second.
Personal privilege.
Senator from the second, request a point of personal privilege. Senator from the second, you may proceed.
Mr. President, it will be very brief. We're proud. This body is probably reminded almost daily, and certainly during every filibuster, that Senate rules do not require senators to speak on the particular piece of legislation on the floor. Thank you.
Senator from Cole.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of announcements.
Hearing no objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of announcements. Announcements. Senator from Cole.
I have an announcement. I would like to remind the body tomorrow morning at 7:30 a.m. sharp, Mr. President, the prayer breakfast with the Reverend Gawk will begin in the Bingham Conference Room.
Announcements. Senator from the second.
Mr. President, your Committee on General Laws will meet upon adjournment.
Thank you, Senator. Announcements. Hearing none, Senator from Cole.
Thank you, Mr. President. No further business coming for the body. I move the Senate stand in recess until 2 p.m. this day.
Senator from Cole moves the Senate stand in recess until 2 p.m. this day. All those in favor of that motion, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The Senate will stand in recess until 2 p.m. this date.